Well, good afternoon, everybody. The day after V-Day, Valentine's Day. Hope you had a good one. My goodness, we had fun yesterday here on the All Request and Dedication program. We went an extra hour yesterday from noon to 3 p.m. And Kyle, we didn't have any trouble filling it up. We had so many fine requests and dedications. So, by golly, we had a great time. How about you? Did you have a good V-Day?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I took my fiance out to the Minnesota Zoo, actually.
What? Really?
Yeah.
What's going on out there besides the animals? Do they have some entertainment?
They did have a Valentine's Day, you know, special event thing,
right, okay.
But I didn't get to take her to that. It was sold out.
Okay, well, anyway, it's
still
the thought that counts.
The animals, that.
Let's go to the zoo on Valentine's Day. There's something romantic about that. I should identify myself, Stan Turner here. Thank you so much for your company. We always enjoy having you with us here, and we do our utmost to bring you a program here on Saturday that is both informative and entertaining, and I know that with our guest today, we'll give you both. There's no doubt about it. Let's see. We heard the man. It's 14 above zero right now. Maybe topping out at 22 degrees. That's above zero, folks. But there is a bite in the wind today. So if you're going out, bundle up. The long, cold winter. Yep, it's been long and cold, all right. And it's not done with us yet. Just how long, how cold, how snowy remains to be seen. This has been a time when indoor activities have perhaps saved our sanity, at least part of it. Indoor activities like reading. I'm guessing that books have been mental comfort food for many of us. I don't have any sales figures at hand, but I would not be surprised if book sales have risen as the temperatures have fallen this winter. Authors, publishers, and booksellers will tell you we are a book-crazy people around these parts, no matter the weather. And that means people like Mary Ann Grossman become our guiding light when it comes to picking out just the right books. Mary Ann is the book critic at the St. Paul Pioneer Press, and she's been at it quite a while. Yep, and she's in the top tier of book critics and reviewers in terms of both quality and tenure. Mary Ann Grossman is what I like to call the doyenne of the book reviewing world.
Like Barbara
Kirkland. I always spring one on you like that.
I should have put on my big 18th century ball gown.
Well, you got it out in the lobby. Go ahead and put it on your great big hat with all the feathers and flowers. The doyen. That's a term of endearment. It is. I checked it before the show. I thought I knew what it means, and it's a good. It's all good, Marianne. Welcome back.
Thank you.
After you get over your laughing jag here now, but how many years have you been with the Pioneer Press? Total.
52, but I am working part-time.
All right.
And I tried to retire in 2001 and didn't work, and here I am.
Poor, you say part-time. You're reading, you're working all the time. I know you are. And how many years as book critic?
Since 83.
83. Before that, on the paper, you were part of what they called, back in them our days, the women's page?
I was women's editor. And in fact, before I was women's editor, I worked for Amy Birdsall, and we were a society section.
Society.
And I got through McAllister College without ever hearing the term Alençon lace, which is what brides wear.
Yeah, oh, okay.
I wrote Alençon lace maybe a million times when we wrote those long yards describing brides and their bridesmaids. But different time. I'm not disparaging what we did. Different
mm-hmm,
time.
Mm-hmm, yeah. Not too many women were out in the streets doing the so-called hard news beats then, right?
No,
covering
but
City Hall,
no,
police,
but the privileged women were doing volunteerism, and We wouldn't have the towns we had if it wasn't for those volunteer women, from the Junior League
right.
to Eastern
point.
Star, Jewish women's groups. They were the ones who did the hard work for some applause, but not much.
That's right. And you gave them some applause, which they deserve. Betty Musser comes to mind.
Betty,
a quick digression.
She was one. She was a perfect example.
She helped save the beautiful landmark
she
center,
did.
The old federal courts building
$1.
On Rice Park.
They sold it to the the city. Well, they sold it for $1 anyway.
So you covered these ladies, and they were ladies who made a difference. They really did. So thank you for that. Your efforts, your journalistic talents were not wasted. Then how did you come to be on the book critic desk?
A boss hated me. You want the sordid story?
Yeah, give it to us. This is good.
This boss came, and we had been a family paper, and then he was the first outsider, and everybody had to reapply for their jobs. At the time, I was writing a women's column. Mm-hmm. He did not like me from the day he walked in the office.
Why?
I don't know.
Who
why.
Can
I
like
know.
You?
I don't know. So anyway, he thought, so he gave me the book beat, thinking I was going to sit in the corner like Miss Havisham, you know, and get spider webs all over me. What he didn't realize was just about that time, the literary community exploded, and that we had this renaissance that was probably not like anything in the country. Mm-hmm. In about 1975, there was a little fundraiser at Sammy D's in Minneapolis. Mm-hmm. A guy nobody ever heard of hardly called Garrison Keillor was the MC. And there was a chanteuse, and Patricia Hampel may or may not have written out some rules on a napkin, I don't know. And anyway, that was the beginning of The Loft. And then small presses moved here, and an important agent, and Garrison got on the cover of Time magazine with Lake Bogondes. Mm-hmm. Somebody should document that. Mm-hmm. And I keep telling every doctoral candidate out there, if you want a doctoral thesis, just write about what went on in these towns from about 1975 to, 2000. I put it at 2000 because that's when Open Book opened, that beautiful building.
A book explosion. It was serendipity. You were at the right place at the right time, even though the guy was trying to punish
you. And you know what? He left. 2 days later, he left.
I think I know the guy. So, he shall go nameless on this show.
This is my revenge story.
All right, good. We got that. It feels good to get it out.
It does.
Okay. Marianne Grossman, books critic, book reviewer for the St. Paul Pioneer Press. Oh, this lady, you know, some people travel light, Kyle. This lady travels heavy. You saw the bag she brought in, brimming with books. Yep.
Oh, yeah. It was pretty good size.
She reads them all, too. You know she does.
I do read them.
You do. I know you do. Yep. That's why your reviews are so good and so telling. Well, look, let's start here. We have many wonderful sponsors on this show, in the one Monday through Friday, too. Not the least of which is Valley Bookseller. This is in Stillwater, by the way, run by all ladies. And it is a fantastic, one of the best independent books.
That's right.
This was an endangered species not so long ago.
20 years ago when Barnes & Noble first moved in here, you know, this was where they began. I wrote more doom-laden stories. Everybody was. And now they're gone and borders are gone. And the indies who held on... there is a resurgence. Part of it, I think, is the buy local movement.
Okay.
Part of it is they're smart. Part of it is people who go into it know they're not going to make a fortune. They do it for love of books. Mm-hmm. And they know books. They can tell you what to get for Aunt Tilly that won't offend her, or for Aunt Maud and Will, who doesn't get offended.
or who likes the spicy. And books for the kids, too. They know kids' books
that's
and everything
right.
in between.
That's right. And they've all got good reading programs, reading series where they bring in authors. They've got children's programs. They work hard. Yeah. They work hard.
Kathleen Eddy and her crew over here at Valley. Aren't they great there?
I just stopped in to see them because I want to talk about this book.
We're going to talk about that book. It's our buddy Larry Millette, with whom you used to work at the Pioneer Press. And he was first a general assignment reporter when he came on. He worked the night shift and covered the homicides and the knifings and all that stuff that rookie reporters get. Then he gravitated, kind of created his own beat, architecture writing. You thought, oh boy, that's boring. Not at all.
Nope.
Larry wrote not about just about the outside of the buildings, what went on inside. Them and therein lies many, many tales. And he's actually transformed a lot of that into fiction. And so you happen to have in your hot little journalistic book reviewing hand here right now one that I'm not even sure is on the bookshelf.
It is. It's coming out in March, but this is what, the middle of February?
So it
should be coming in bookstores.
Larry Millette, and he straddles the line, both fiction and nonfiction.
Right, because, you know, he did the Lost Twin Cities series, which is on television often with me on Channel 2. So this is Strongwood, a crime dossier.
This is fiction, though.
This is fiction. And remember, Larry did five books about Sherlock Holmes.
Right.
And then he had to stop doing them to concentrate on Holmes because Conan Doyle picked it up again. So there were only so many years.
Mm-hmm.
But...
He would place Sherlock Holmes in Minnesota during the times he does not appear in the Conan Doyle canon.
But everybody knows the canon, so he could. But he does have him make appearances, and in this book he does because Watson's at the Mayo Clinic. And this book, Strongwood, is the last name of the woman. Her name is Adie Strongwood, and she shot her lover in 1903, and she admits it. And the book is made up of trial transcripts and a diary of her lawyer named Percy, and some things she wrote for the Minneapolis paper exonerating herself.
Wow.
And so this is outside the courtroom where Adie is meeting the great man Holmes himself. And this comes from her lawyer's diary.
Okay.
Let me introduce you to the one and only Sherlock Holmes, I told Adie as she looked up from her chair. She arose at once to greet Holmes and said how much she admired him and his work. She then surprised even Holmes, I think, by mentioning Irene Adler and what a great woman she must have been. Holmes replied gallantly that Adler was indeed an extraordinary woman. He then fixed his probing eyes on Adie and asked if she too was extraordinary. She held his gaze, which could wither most men, for what seemed like a very long time. Finally, she said in a quiet voice, I hope to become so, Mr. Holmes, if only the jury will do what is right in this unfortunate matter. To which Holmes replied, I am sure the jury will reach the correct verdict. They locked gazes once again, and I felt as though I was witnessing some strange and intense ritual, the meaning of which no outsider could grasp.
Could Holmes see guilt in the eyes
of a murderer? That's what you don't know. And you don't know if she's why she did it.
Okay.
She says self-defense. Larry did an intricate thing here because it's made up of the transcripts and these other things, and he weaves them all together, but it never gets boring. When he needs to hop along, compress the time, he does it. It's a real page-turner.
He's a masterly storyteller. There's no doubt about it, whether fiction or nonfiction. And so are these transcripts, are they an actual case? Okay,
no.
it's all invented.
Yeah.
But it's very plausible, isn't
right.
it?
Right, and like all his books, he gives you this this very definite prologue, which makes it sound like, of course, it's real. It really happened.
His own homegrown detective here, who oftentimes works in union with Sherlock Holmes, is
Shad Rafferty.
Right,
he's
Shad
in this book too.
Okay,
he's
okay.
A saloon owner on I think St. Peter's Street.
Ryan Hotel.
Yeah, yeah.
The ground
the
level
Ryan.
Where you can stagger in and out at
the
Rafferty's saloon. By the way, have you caught on PBS the Benedict Cumberbatch portrayal of Sherlock Holmes?
I have not. Is it wonderful?
It's set in modern times, and at first I thought this won't work. This can't work. It works. This is unbelievable.
I'm sorry, but I think it's on when Bones is on, and I am deeply ashamed.
Okay. Don't be too deeply ashamed.
To tell you, I love this show.
Marianne Grossman with us, the book critic. I call her book reviewer, too, of the St. Paul Pioneer Press. She is loaded for books, loaded for bear today. And we mentioned that there's been a resurgence, hey, in independent bookstores.
Right.
We should say, of course, Barnes & Noble is still up and standing.
They are.
They're still going.
We don't want any put down Barnes & Noble.
No.
They've
had
hard times.
They serve a great, right. They are. And they have some great offerings there,
right.
too. There's no doubt about
right.
it. Before we go on with some more of your book reviews here, you say that there's been a leveling off of e-books.
And what that means.
Kyle, do you read e-books at all?
I don't. I never really got into it because I just feel like looking at the computer screen for that long would just strain the eyes.
Yeah, Kyle, who's saying that he doesn't want to look at the computer screen for a long time, doesn't do too much of that.
Yeah.
He's a very young guy.
A lot of people say that.
So.
So what that means is that leveling off means that it's just not going as fast as it was.
Okay.
And I think it's kind of finding, the format is finding itself where for travel, when you don't want to carry a whole bunch of books.
Right.
And a lot of authors for popular fiction, like romances, that's where the e-readers are because you can buy it for $2.99.
Mm-hmm.
And erase it, and then you don't, because we do fill up with books, let's face it.
So-called cozy books, little ones you
cozies.
Can download and throw out, huh?
Well, I don't, let's not put it quite that way, but yes, you can delete them, because we only have so much room.
Sometimes I'm so blunt, Marianne. It's just ridiculous. Let's see. Let's take a break here. We're going to come back with Marianne Grossman. She's got a whole lot of stories, a lot of mysteries, a lot of
two
great
from
fiction.
Duluth.
Okay, two from Duluth. Mm-hmm. Oh, boy. We're going to get to that. Marianne Grossman, books critic, book reviewer for the St. Paul Pioneer Press. We got a lot of stuff, a table full of stories for you. We'll be right back.
At Jaime's Haberdashery, men never sacrifice fashion for weather. So no matter how cold it gets, you can still spot a Jaime's man by his impeccable taste and the confidence that only comes from a hot lather shave. Jaime's Haberdashery helps men look and feel their best with high-quality clothing cut and styled just for them. Create a look that's uniquely yours with tailored suits, overcoats, hats, and accessories that make winter blush and at prices that won't melt your wallet. Jaime's Haberdashery, 400 St. Peter Street in downtown St. Paul. Online at Jaime's.com.
At the Stan Turner Show, we love good stories, and there's no better place to find them than Valley Bookseller in downtown Stillwater. Valley Bookseller is an independent bookstore with knowledgeable and friendly staff who love books. Tell them what you like to read, and they'll make terrific recommendations just for you. Also, discover one of the finest children's collections in the entire Twin Cities. Valley Bookseller, great books, great people. 217 North Main in Stillwater. Online at valleybookseller.com.
Did you know we had fingerprints before we were even born?
We did?
Yep, when we were only 9 weeks old.
My mom says our hearts were beating too.
Well, my mom says I could suck my thumb and smile before I was even born.
You still do. You don't have to tell.
Hello, my name is Marianne Koharski, and I'm the director of Pro-Life Across America, the Billboard People. If you know someone who is pregnant or in need of information and alternatives, including adoption, or would like to support the work of Pro-Life Across America, please call 1-800-366-7773 or visit our website at prolifeacrossamerica.org. Pro-Life Across America, non-political and totally educational.
A baby's heart is beating 18 days from conception.
We are back on this rather blustery Saturday in February. It's 12 above zero right now in the Twin Cities. Lots of breeze out there to make us unhappy, and there's talk of a little bit of snow this afternoon, so we'll check that out.
It's actually snowing right now.
It's actually snowing right now. There. I was updated even as I spoke the untruth. Thank you, Kyle. Kyle, you've got the window, and I don't, so thank you.
Yeah, it actually, I looked out the window at about 12:05, and it wasn't. And then I looked out again at 12:10, and it was coming down.
Is it coming down heavily?
It looks like it's pretty small, but it's pretty quick.
Kyle, let's keep it small and short. Okay, there we go. So we've got the weather report, the update here, and we're here with Marianne Grossman, book critic for the St. Paul Pioneer Press. And maybe some people say a little early to talk about spring books. Not really. They're coming off the presses like crazy.
This is the spring season. Really, I consider starting in January the spring season.
Okay, okay. Even the word spring makes me feel warm. We have a book, interestingly and curiously, titled Stillwater.
Yep.
And we're not too far from... We're sitting right in the middle of Stillwater right now.
Not very far from where the book starts.
Wonderful. Well, tell us about this. Could be the book of the spring locally.
Well, certainly locally, because this is us. Nicole Helget, H-E-L-G-E-T, who is really from Mankato, but she likes Stillwater. Mm-hmm. And I understand, although I haven't seen it, there's a mural here of that log jam.
It's on our building right down here on the corner.
Okay, so that's what started her, and it starts the book.
Ah.
And one of the twins, there's a boy and a girl twin, finds the key log, and it unjams. These twins were separated at birth, and the woman is now married to a prominent man, and her twin was raised in an orphanage. Mm. And the woman does not want anyone to find out that their father is named Beaver Jean, an old, smelly Voyager trapper.
We can smell him now, can't we,
and
Kyle?
So she kills him with an axe, and this is not a mystery. This is not a spoiler. She does it very early, and then the other book is the other part is a flashback. What I love about this book, besides the story, which is very inventive, is Nicole has a wonderful sense of place. This is us. And we talk about environmental degradation now, and we forget what she brings out so well is that even before the Civil War, the beaver were gone, the trees were gone.
Right.
Beaver Jean and the man twin cannot believe that these beautiful trees are being clear cut. By the time Beaver Jean gets back from a long trip, just in about 1858, he can't believe what Stillwater looks like. On one hand, it's wonderful. There's a newspaper, and it's thriving. But on the other hand, the forests he knew were gone.
Gone, right.
And also, she is just a beautiful writer. So, can I read?
Please do. Nicole Helget, this is called...
G-L-G-E-T,
Stillwater. Okay, go ahead.
Stillwater is the name of it. And so the twins' father is Beaver Jean. And when she kills him, when his daughter kills him with the axe, he's dying. And this is a look at what he's thinking when he dies. Beaver Jean sank into a weightless and painless place where he saw his own mother waiting in the light at the end of a long wooded lane. On either side of him, brown tree trunks rose to green foliage, and above that, stars. He had the sense of falling backward and going forward at the same time, like leaning back in a canoe as it glided ahead. He saw all the waterways he'd traveled, the rapid ones with boulders and the falls, and the smooth ones, quiet and mirroring. He saw all the wilderness he'd hunted, the animals he'd trapped. He saw again the bear he killed, the one that had swiped his thigh before landing in his lap, dead. He smelled again the animal's sour fur, like the odor from the underside of tree bark. He saw the women he'd loved. There'd been so many. But he lingered on his three wives first, the two moon-faced squaws. He learned again how they bickered when he first brought the Lakota one to meet the Ojibwe one. He saw again the sprightly girl Lydian, with the distended belly full of his seed, her red hair dancing away from his grip. And though he hadn't been there, he was able to see the babies knotted together in a cradle as though he had been, oh, dying is a marvelous adventure, he thought.
He's seeing all these things so lyrically and poetically, and but more. after he is axed.
After he's axed.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Boy, that's quite a
facility. It is hard to write death scenes. Most of them do not come off very well.
Right.
And
right.
she just writes beautifully about nature. And her characters are wonderful. The one young man who has an underground railroad, and the boy is abandoned, and he is raised in the house of prostitution. And the priest comes and blesses the women because he thinks they're really just lost lambs.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Father Paul. Wonderful characters.
Wow. Now, you have, okay, Stillwater. That's probably going to be a book award contestant for
sure.
I hope so. Yes, it sounds like it will.
Yeah.
One that already is, I believe, is Brian Freeman's his latest Jonathan Stride novel. Those of you following Freeman's work, fun. It's called The Cold Nowhere, and you have reviewed this and given it a very fine
And I'm looking at where the ARC, it's just, this one is also just out.
Okay.
And he's doing his readings now.
The Cold Nowhere.
Right.
This is set in Duluth.
Right.
Okay.
Jonathan Stride is a detective.
Okay.
And it's about, he finds a girl, a young girl, shivering in his bedroom. She has jumped into the lake to get away from someone. And he knew her mother and could not stop the husband from beating her to death. So this girl he wants to save. He also has a girlfriend who went away and now has come back. These are sort of a cross between police procedurals and thrillers. And this is another person who writes so well about a sense of place.
You can give us an example from the book.
I can.
Please do,
Marianne. Right.
Okay.
Stride lived in a place that never forgot the past. Duluth was a small town masquerading as a big city, and small towns had long memories. Fewer than 100,000 souls lived inside its borders. It sounded like a lot, but for a native, it was nothing. Other towns tore down the past and built on top of it, not Duluth. The terraced streets that rose off the shore of Lake Superior still boasted Victorian homes that dated to the early part of the previous century, when shipping and mining had made the city a glamour town. The wealth of that era was long gone, but the houses remained, decaying like sorrowful echoes. The same was true of the Canal Park factories near the water, even after they'd been shuttered and converted into shops and restaurants for the tourists. He'd spent his whole life here. It was an extreme place, like a frontier outpost on the border of the Canadian wilderness. For months, the waves of the Great Lake made ice sculptures on the beach, and the smaller lakes simply froze into roads for fishermen. Blizzards buried the empty highways, and Alberta winds swept snow drifts up to the roof lines.
Mr. Freeman writes beautifully.
He does write beautifully, and he's been a Minnesota Book Award winner, and he deserves it.
Right. He's a finalist for sure, and he's been a winner, has he, in the past?
Oh, yes.
Okay, all right. Now, Marianne, this book is set where? The Cold Nowhere? What's the time period?
It's contemporary.
You reviewed the book in your column in the St. Paul Pioneer Press, and I could quote from what you quoted.
Oh, please do.
He writes, Freeman, you say, has a great sense of place also. And you write, and quoting from him, this is Freeman's words about Duluth. Locals boasted that Duluth toughened anyone who survived the winters. But Stride, the detective, knew that it also made you old before your time. You couldn't fight the elements and not feel the damage to your body. Isn't that rich? Those of us who have been in Duluth, not lived there, but just visited there,
and I think
know the truth of that.
I think that goes on. It also made him closed in terms of his psyche. And so one of the problems he's having with his girlfriend, who is a former cop, is that both of them are so closed off deaf, they can't communicate, which happens with law enforcement and everybody else.
As you say, the more time he writes, the more time he spent in Duluth, the more he learned about keeping things inside.
Right.
Hung on to the pain, and you locked it away. You stayed closed off to the world, and after a while, it became a way of life.
Right. Stride is a very likable character.
He is. Yeah. Very good. So, also, we have another Duluth story, or at least...
We do. Wendy Webb. She writes gothics.
Oh,
wonderful woman.
We have a big fan base of gothics.
And it's got all the elements, ghosts and secret passages.
Looks
and
like
big
Glenn
house.
Sheen.
It does look like Glenn Sheen.
On the cover,
Actually, you know where she got the where she took it from was Downton Abbey. Got the plans, the blueprints for Highclere Castle, which is where, she fastened it after that.
Lots of offshoots from Downton.
It's about a woman who has, in the beginning, discovers that her husband is a snake and is going to jail for fraud, and then he's killed, and she has no money. And this guy comes and says, well, come and be my mother's companion in this big house. The mother, everybody thought was dead. She was a horror writer. And so the woman does, and she's finding out there's more to this than meets the eye.
Ooh, please tell us more.
Well, so one night, of course, she's roaming the house. I've kind of forgotten why, but it doesn't matter. And so she comes upon the closed room, of course. And so she's looking at this painting. People in Victorian dress were seated at a round table, the very one in the center of the room before me. They were holding hands. Candles burned, and a fire was lit in the fireplace. It might have simply been a deception of an evening's post-dinner entertainment, if not for the specters. Swirling around the people at the table were ghostly images. A woman whose mouth was open in a scream. Three children dressed in white gowns with wicked looks on their faces. A dog with bared teeth and red eyes. An elderly couple hovered beside one of the men at the table, each with a hand on his shoulder. A man floated in the corner holding his own severed head. And then she was mesmerized by the painting, and she was compelled to move closer and closer. And what mesmerized her so was, quote, the woman's face. It looked exactly like mine.
Egad, egad. Oh, mercy, mercy,
Don't
mercy.
Read this one alone at night.
The title, The Vanishing, is that it?
The Vanishing.
The Vanishing, okay. I imagine this taking place in one of those old mansions on the shore of Lake Superior.
Yes, exactly.
Out by Glen Sheen, by the Congo Mansion, probably like that. Wow, you got us scared to death, Marianne. You threw the book in your bag right away. You like it was something evil. She looks at the face
Smack
and it's
it.
Her own. We've mentioned the book awards, and I know you've got others to talk about here, but it might do well. We have the book awards will be announced in April.
April 5th.
This is the Minnesota Book Awards.
Right, and they're coming back. They had been in Minneapolis last year. They're coming back. They're going to be in River Center this year.
Coming back home to St. Paul.
It began in St. Paul.
Mm-hmm. You want to bounce around and tell us some of the finalists here? Or do you want to do that a little bit later?
Let's do it a little bit later because... Because you're throwing me off.
I am throwing you off. Well, we've covered the two Duluth stories.
Right,
okay?
And we should do children's and YA because the biggest literature news in January was Kate DeCamille, who everybody loves, who, first of all, early on, she was chosen the National Ambassador for Young People's Literature by the Library of Congress, which is a big deal.
Oh, yes.
And then later in the month, she won her second Newbery Award for Flora and Ulysses. Mm-hmm. And for people who don't know about these awards, the American Library Association Youth Media Awards are the biggest awards that you for children and young adults. And there's two major awards, the Caldecott for illustrating and the Newbery for writing. And this was her second Newbery. She had also won for The Tale of Despereaux. I think I talked about this book, Flora and Ulysses, when I was here in September. It had just come out.
Okay.
And it's about a squirrel who gets sucked into a vacuum cleaner.
You did talk about
uh-huh.
that. You cannot forget a book about a squirrel that gets sucked into a vacuum cleaner. It's with me very much as if I just heard it.
And he becomes a superhero. And
don't they always?
Sure. How many squirrels
we called them Hoover. We called them Hoover. Okay, go ahead.
So Flora is a very cynical girl, and she loves newspaper comics, and she loves one that's called Terrible Things Can Happen to You. And being a nervous person who is very worried all the time anyway, I can really identify. With Flora.
What do you have to be worried about, Marianne?
Oh, everything. So Flora takes Ulysses under her wing, and this is when he has just come out of the vacuum cleaner. Actually,
Kyle, do you believe this?
When I interviewed Kate right
crazy.
After the morning, this one,
okay,
she said she had gotten the idea partly because there was a sick squirrel on her doorstep, and she called her kindness best friend, and her best friend said, "I'm coming over with a shovel, Kate." And then her mother's Hoover vacuum cleaner was in the garage, and she says, "Sometime in my fevered brain, these two things came together."
Thus a book was born.
Actually, she and some other people were surprised because this is a rather lighthearted book. They usually don't give the Newbery to quite such a light. Anyway, so this is...
All right.
This is when Ulysses has just come out of vacuum cleaner.
We've not been drinking, ladies and gentlemen, just water. Go ahead.
She spoke to him, and he understood her. What the girl said was, "Ulysses, come here, Ulysses." And without thinking, he moved toward her. "It's okay," she said. And he believed her. It was astonishing. Everything was astonishing. The setting sun was illuminating each blade of grass. It was reflecting off the girl's glasses, making a halo of light around the girl's round head, setting the whole world on fire. The squirrel thought, "When did things become so beautiful? And it has been this way all along. How is it that I never noticed before?" "Listen to me," the girl said. "My name is Flora. Your name is Ulysses." "Okay," thought the squirrel. She put her hand on him. She picked him up. She cradled him in her left arm. He felt nothing but happiness. Why had he always been so terrified of humans? He couldn't imagine. Actually, he could imagine.
Ladies and gentlemen, the euphoria felt by a squirrel after exiting a vacuum cleaner bag. Where can you get entertainment between two covers of a book like that, huh, Kyle? Kids, that'll be your next book, Kyle.
Kids will love it. They will just love this book.
It sounds fairly entertaining.
Yeah, fairly, I'd say so. And wacky, too, yeah, but fun. Well done, right, Marianne?
Right. And now we will get to the book awards.
Okay, sure, if you'd like, we can start on those.
Okay, yeah. Here. One of them that won, when Kate won the Newbery at the same time, there's a long list of winners. And one woman who won for the Stonewall Award was Kristen Conan Mills, Beautiful Music for Ugly Children. The Stonewall Award is named for, everybody knows the story of the Stonewall, what happened at Stonewall, where the gay movement was born, and they fought back. So this is, but the interesting thing is this is about a transgender person whose birth name is Elizabeth, but calls himself Gabe. He always knew he was in a boy's body. And I was talking to Brian Ferry, who does the editing for Flux, which is a very edgy young adult. It's in Woodbury. It's part of Llewellyn. And he said the conversation is being expanded now because there has been a burst of gay literature for young adults in about the last 10, 15 years, and it mirrored what happened with the adult gays. The first books were angst and coming out, and then the next wave was, well, yes, these folks are gay, and so what? And now we're turning to transgender folks. So so Gabe is just a sweet character, and he has a radio show which he calls Beautiful Music for Ugly Children, and he's so successful. There's the Ugly Children Squad that goes around town and leads things. So this is Gabe sort of ruminating on where he stands in life. "My birth name is Elizabeth, but I am a guy, Gabe. My parents think I've gone crazy, and the rest of the world is happy to agree with them, but I know I'm right. I've been a boy my whole life. I wish I'd been born a vampire, or a werewolf instead, or with a big red clown nose permanently stuck to my face, because that stuff would be easy. Having a brain that doesn't agree with your body is a much bigger pain in the three-letter word. I know there are ways to match things up, though I have no access to any of those things right now, plus everything costs a ton of money, which sucks. And there are 24/7 reminders that I'm not really me, like my name. Not that Elizabeth is a bad name, but it's not what I think of as my real name. That's Gabe. I also know people think I'm an issue, and that gets really old. Anytime those scary trans people come up, everybody flips out." So this is the world young adults live in now, and it's a long way from, the Corner House Girls.
Okay, all right. Well, what else do we have here in the pile?
We have sex and violence, which is...
sex and violence in the book pile here. Okay.
Do we have to stop, or should we keep going?
Let's take a break. Let's take our last
And will that be a teaser for your listeners?
Wow, sex and violence coming up right after this break with Mary Ann Grossman of the St. Paul Pioneer Press. We'll be right back.
At Hymie's Haberdashery, men never sacrifice fashion for weather. So no matter how cold it gets, you can still spot a Hymie's man by his impeccable taste and the confidence that only comes from a hot lather shave. Hymie's Haberdashery helps men look and feel their best with high-quality clothing cut and styled just for them. Create a look that's uniquely yours with tailored suits, overcoats, hats, and accessories that make winter blush. And at prices that won't melt your wallet. Hymie's Haberdashery, 400 St. Peter Street in downtown St. Paul. Online at Hymie's.
To really experience a book, meet the author. I'm Stan Turner for Valley Bookseller in downtown Stillwater. Every month, Valley Bookseller's calendar is loaded with events featuring both local and national authors. Visit valleybookseller.com and click the events calendar for a complete list. Choose from monthly events like the Totally Criminal Cocktail Hour or special presentations with authors on tour. Meet your favorite author at Valley Bookseller. Great books, great people. 217 North Main in Stillwater.
Running a small business is a lot like juggling. You have to stay focused on what's really important at all times. My name is Cameron Kelly, and I'll make sure your personal and professional legal needs are taken care of so you can concentrate on the important matters of running your business. Everything from employment and real estate issues to estate planning, wills, trusts, and probate law. My name is Cameron Kelly. Call me today for a free consultation.
Cameron Kelly Law. For your business. For your property. For you, call 651-705-6277. That's 651-705-6277. Cameron Kelly Law.
Todd, I'm tired of winter.
So am I, Jeff, but spring is coming.
How do you know?
Because the Greater Stillwater Chamber of Commerce is hosting its fifth annual Home and Garden Show.
When is it?
It's Saturday, March 1st from 10 until 3, and once again, we're at Rutherford Elementary School in Stillwater.
That's right. We were there last year.
We'll be having more than 60 exhibitors, lots of inspiring seminars, and live broadcasting from KLBB.
And it's free admission with non-perishable item to Valley Outreach or $3 at the door.
That's right, Jeff. Stillwater Home and Garden Show, March 1st, Rutherford Elementary School. We'll see you there.
We're going to jump right back in here. Welcome. Thank you for being with us. Stan Turner here. And we are having a ball going through the latest book offerings here with Mary Ann Grossman, the well-known and beloved and highly respected book critic and
more,
reviewer.
More.
And Doyen. You are a Doyen. I love that title. And we're working our way through a lot of fiction books and in the category here. These are out and available now, some
yes.
of which are
yes.
you know, could be award winners, or
yes.
some of them are on the short list now for the Minnesota Book Awards.
Right, and the ones from the Book Awards, of course, were last year.
Right,
although Brian Freeman's was published, is only being published now, but it's a nominee because it was published in Britain in 2013.
Oh, that's what it was.
Yeah.
Well, you have one, you're holding one here under the
yes.
fiction category
right.
For children, young adult,
right.
and it's this interesting title
right.
for a young adult called Sex and Violence,
right.
and tell us a bit about it, please.
Well, it isn't exactly what it sounds like. This young man who is just hot and is after girls is at a private school, and he goes too far and he seduces a woman, a girl, a student, and he gets beaten up in the shower badly, and she probably gets raped, although that's not clear. And so his father takes him away to the lake in Minnesota, and this is about his friends. I have to say, This is filled with the F words, and these kids have sex, but this is part of YA today, and I would say
when
that
you
this
say YA, young adult,
and
okay.
I would say at the older young adults,
mm-hmm.
although. Certainly there's a crossover with adults,
right.
too.
A book like this, there's no way you could read an excerpt on the air, is there?
Well, I did find one.
You're
so,
going to do it.
So the protagonist and his buddies are fooling around at the Starlight Drive-In by the lake, and they played Frisbee and smoked, and then they, until the sun went down yeah. and the movie started, and then this is first person. This would have been a non-event, except for the fact that I normally had no friends and never did anything that didn't involve some girl I was trying to get down with. But while enjoyable and probably something that would make Dr. Penny proud, that wasn't the only significant thing of the night. Because between features, while I was going to the bathroom. In the nasty bathroom behind the concession stand, three girls came by and started talking to Jesse and Tom. They were a little sleazy looking, but still cute. Nothing you'd be hesitant to touch. Long hair, all done up differently, all wearing shorts and tight shirts, and everything was tan and made up and smelled like cake frosting. Actually, I should point out that there are very tender parts of this, because his repressed and rich father lives at the lake with him, and all of a sudden his father starts to blossom, and he meets the mother of one of his friends, and she paints his toenails, and he turns into a different guy. So I don't want, you know, this is not porn. But it's edgy, as we say.
Edgy. We do not do porn, do we, on this show,
God, no.
Kyle? No, we don't even come close to it. You're holding in your hot little journalistic hand another piece of fiction,
and this is
right?
from a local press. All this right. is My Brother's Name by Lara Krughoff, mm-hmm. K-R-U-G-H-O-F-F. And this one explores gender, but the protagonist is not gay. She's... but her brother is psychotic, and so they go off together to live in an apartment, and she sort of backs into taking his identity because she doesn't have a driver's license, and she plays in a band, and she's a boy. But what happens is it gets increasingly confused about gender. What this is mostly a look at mental illness. And
I see.
I'm not going to read from it because we've got poetry to read.
Right,
but
you
it's
do.
Well yeah. worth it's well worth
All
reading.
Right. Well, thank you for those tips, Marianne Grossman. On the other side of the ledger, that would be the nonfiction ledger. I know you review mostly fiction, mysteries, that sort of thing.
Oh, yeah, we do nonfiction.
You do?
Sure. Mm-hmm.
I just, if I may, and I showed you these before we went on the air.
Well, yes, and it's your show.
Fascinating. two books I definitely want to read is one called The Trip to Echo Spring on Writers and Drinking. Yes. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is a subject that is touched on from time to time. The author in this case, and then the name is Olivia Lang. I think it's Lang, isn't it?
She's a British woman, isn't
British,
she?
British, yes. Yeah. And the six authors she chooses to write about their alcoholism and their writing, how did the booze affect their writing and their lives? Tennessee Williams, John Berryman, The Usual Suspects, F. Scott Fitzgerald, Ernest Hemingway, John Cheever, and Raymond Carver. Mm-hmm. I remember years ago, Marianne, a book called The Thirsty Muse mm-hmm. about Fitzgerald and about Hemingway and about, let's see, Eugene O'Neill, and it was one other, but a fascinating study. And, mm-hmm. and again, you mentioned, we don't want to romanticize this, that it takes booze
That's
or
right.
some sort of a chemical
That's right.
mind-bending
That's right.
Element to, right. to make you write. So.
I'm doing a story now about Laura Childs, who writes cozies, murder sub-genre of murder mysteries. Her name is Jerry Schmidt, and she was in advertising. And she's doing three series, and she's going to do probably two more. And she writes and writes and writes, and she nukes her cheeseburger and goes back and writes some more. So this is an example of someone, you do the job.
Yeah.
You don't need booze, and you don't need the muse.
Or the obsession and compulsion
right,
to
right.
do it.
You I should, mean, come on,
yeah,
these,
really,
these
really.
Guys.
I think there was a time back in Hemingway's day, and probably before, where it was almost expected that you use booze or some form of drugs to unleash the creative juices, which is baloney.
Well,
but I think a lot of people thought that you thought better when you were half in the bag or entirely in the bag.
And also, many of these guys had women to take care of them.
That's right. They didn't have to clean up their own messes.
No,
they
didn't have to. No, they did they took care of the kids and they took care of the house.
Right,
the women
right.
did.
And Zelda Fitzgerald,
mm-hmm.
and she fell into
mm-hmm.
the problem herself.
Mm-hmm.
But another book. I like historical biography, and there's a good one out here by Jane Ridley called The Heir Apparent: A Life of Edward VII, the Playboy Prince, one of the spawn of Queen Victoria.
Uh-huh.
He was badly abused psychologically by his mother. Mother and father, Albert.
He was fat, too.
Yes, he was, but he had no self-esteem left, I think, too. This is not to excuse
right,
his bad
right.
behavior, but you can see how he got warped
right.
so early, because
right.
he was loathed by his parents. He
right.
truly was, called ugly by Queen Victoria. That's something.
And
itself.
She blamed him for her husband's death,
she
because
did.
He went up to, was it Oxford, or wherever the prince was to
right.
see him, and got sick, which probably had nothing to
nothing,
do with the trip.
Nothing at all. Read just an excerpt from the review in the New York Times by Janet Maslin of the heir apparent, The Life of Edward VII. She said, Bertie's 1863 marriage to the tall, slender Princess Alexandra of Denmark, who bore him many children and ruined her health in the process, did nothing to cramp Edward's taste for afternoon liaisons, house parties. One woman attempted illicit encounters with Bertie and another man on the same night. Horse racing, hunting parties, and gambling. A baccarat scandal also landed Bertie, King Edward VII, landed him in a courtroom and tarnished his reputation. He's the guy who famously said, "Go ahead and have a joyful time, but don't frighten the horses." Edward VII, okay. For your Downton Abbey fans, there you go. All right, back to Marianne now, back to the land of fiction, I think, huh?
Well, poetry. I think we should end with poetry, right? Because it's such fun to read, so I'm indulging myself here.
Please do. Yes.
But this is important, too, because I don't know... Well, first of all, people are afraid of poetry, many people.
Why?
I think it's not always taught very well. It's taught, and some of the poets who are taught are incomprehensible. You know, they're me poets, and So if you're afraid of poetry, you should try William Stafford, who is deceased, but he was here often. He loved coming to Minnesota. And Grey Wolf Press considers itself his publisher. Mm-hmm. And this new book is Ask Me 100 Essential Poems. Stafford, who I like very much. In fact, I interviewed him once, and I said, well, you know, people don't like poetry all the time. And he said, well, I never use that four-letter word. I just say to my students, read this, and then they don't freak out.
Okay. Poetry. Uh-huh.
So these are the 100 essential poems. Stafford, all his life, he was a conscientious objector in World War II. He was a pacifist, and he never got over it. And his most famous poem, I hope I don't crinkle here. I know that's against radio. His most famous is These Mornings.
Okay.
Watch our smoke curdle up out of the chimney into the canyon channel of air. The wind shakes it free over the trees and hurries it into nothing. Today there is more smoke in the world than ever before. There are more cities going into the sky helplessly than ever before. The cities today are going away into the sky, and what is left is going into the earth. This is what happens when a city is bombed. Part of that city goes away into the sky, and part of that city goes into the earth, and that is what happens to the people when a city is bombed. Part of them goes away into the sky, and part of them goes into the earth, and what is left for us between the sky and the earth is a scar.
A scar. You say he never got over being a conscientious objector.
He never got over being a pacifist.
A pacifist.
Yes.
What do you mean by that? Not getting over.
He did not want war. He thought war was never the way to solve anything under any circumstances. Just the poetry in here. There's other poetry too. Lovely poetry about friendship. He was just a sweet man. But his anti-war poetry is as it could be written about Afghanistan. Some of it was written. In fact, this one was written in 1944 with the bombing of Dresden.
Yes.
This could be Afghanistan.
That was the anniversary just a couple days ago of that. Yes, the British Allied bombing of that still will always be controversial.
And so I want to. Can I give that again?
Please do. Yes.
Ask me 100 essential poems, and it's a paperback, so it's affordable.
Very much, and indeed, we always want to point the way over to Valley Bookseller in downtown Stillwater. If they don't have it on the shelves, and they usually do have these.
Oh, I'm sure they will, because it's a local press.
But they can get them really quickly if they don't. What else do you have there?
We have an anthology from. Again, from Duluth, Holy Cow Press.
Holy Cow Press.
Yeah.
the name of the presses are as good as the stories.
It's got an exclamation point. Holy cow! Exclamation point.
Okay.
The heart of all that is reflections on home, and they asked a lot of people, Minnesotans, but also around the country, to send essays and poems and anything else about what home. Memories and what home means to you. And this is Fixing Potato Salad While the Past Comes and Goes by Sharon Schmielars, who is a very prominent Minnesota poet.
All right.
Mid-August morning at the kitchen counter, potatoes and eggs already boiled. My mother peeled them hot. And her mother, and now me. Oh, it looks so easy. The garden's 260-pound harvest carried into the kitchen, cooked up one day at a time. Windows open, cool breeze. Somewhere down the street, a kid, cranky, hot, bored, crying, I'll give you a whoop. Food. A family history of it. Who cut the roast? Who baked? Who tried to escape cleanup? Who rolled in the grass after eating too much? Who buttered his refrigerator cookies? Who crashed to the floor in a farmer's cafe, sausage half-chewed in his mouth?
Oh,
Who made something out of nothing? Who had only milk and flour when a child in whose house was light craved more than food?
My. Is this set in Duluth, too? Is that what you said?
The presses.
Okay,
yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Well, that's highly descriptive. My goodness, we get that.
Well, and it's sweet, because, again, if you're afraid of poetry, this anyone can relate to this. We have seen our mothers mating.
We have. And this, Mary Oliver.
Oh, I love this. I hope I can read this without crying. This is not a local press, but it was my top when we had to do 10 of our favorite books for 2013, this was my top one.
Okay.
Mary Oliver, who was revered for her poems about dogs.
All right. And the name of the book or collection is Dog.
The name of the book is Dog Songs. And it starts out to be about dogs, but then she has dialogue with her dogs, and it turns into musing about life. And this is about Luke. How are we doing for time, Stan?
Kyle, how much time do we have left here, sir?
Oh, about 4 minutes.
Okay, four minutes. Okay, go ahead, Marianne.
This is titled Luke. I had a dog who loved flowers. Briskly she went through the fields, yet paused for the honeysuckle or the rose, her dark head and her wet nose touching the face of every one with its petals of silk, with its fragrance rising into the air, where the bees, their bodies heavy with pollen, hovered, and easily she adored every blossom, not in the serious, careful way that we choose this blossom or that blossom, the way we praise or don't praise, the way we love or don't love, but the way we long to be, that happy in the heaven of earth, that wild, that loving.
Lovely.
I got through it without
you
crying.
You did it, but you do have a tear in your eye. That is lovely. We have much to learn, don't we, from our friends with
animals. Oh, and everybody, any animal lover would love this collection.
Oh, boy. So back to Duluth for a minute, and fiction, nonfiction, too. Barton Sutter wrote a lot of fun books a few years ago.
He did.
Not the least of which called Cold Comfort, in which he compared Duluth and Superior.
To God.
To God. I love his description of Superior. Anybody, Kyle, have you been to Superior, Wisconsin?
A couple times, yeah.
You know there's not a whole lot there. It doesn't have a whole lot going for it.
I mean, not really.
You get away from the lake, and it's kind of grim. Poor people, but I mean, they're good people, but there's not much going on there. And Sutter said of Superior Lake, the town of Superior, Wisconsin, is where old ore boats go to die. They just rust away in the harbor.
Nobody cares. He was the poet laureate of Duluth.
He was, Barton Sutter. Yeah. I don't know if he's still writing. Do you see much
from
him?
I haven't seen anything from him
I hope
for a while.
Gets cranky. He's very good, isn't he?
Yes,
I like
good.
His stuff. Anything, any parting comments?
Yes, we should talk about a few books that are worth reading, although they're non-Minnesotan.
Okay.
The King's Deception by Steve Berry. And that's Berry. Steve is coming just lecture for the James Ford Bell Library because it's celebrating its 60th anniversary. Mm-hmm. And it's just a wonderful thriller. The King's Deception is a CIA thing that's being run because they're against the British because of the Lockerbie thing. They want to release the guy, and the British won't say anything about it, and the Americans are mad. But the second deception is that Henry VIII had a lot of wealth that he hid. But the third deception is Queen Elizabeth I was a man.
Say what?
And scholars laugh at this because, of course, but it's fiction. But in the village of Beasley, Bisley, supposedly Elizabeth died, Princess Elizabeth, and they substituted a beautiful boy. And up until the 20th century, for 300 years, the village paraded a little boy in girls' clothes. So this gave Steve the idea.
They actually did do that parade?
Yes, they did. Mm-hmm.
Kyle, there might be something to this.
So it's fun. It's a page-turner. It's a thriller. And good for the library for not, I'm sorry, I'm ashamed to say, finding some dull academic who put you to sleep.
We've all suffered.
Have I offended everybody? Is there any age group?
I think we've gone A through Z, as we say in Canada. We've hit them all.
I'm through on this show, Stan.
We are equal opportunity offenders.
Never again.
Well, Kyle, are we just about out of time here? Is that it? Okay, thank you. How much time do we have left, sir? But I think time enough for me to say thanks to Marianne Grossman, right?
Thank
you. Marianne Grossman, St. Paul Pioneer Press book critic. Thank you so
much. Ask me back.
This is fine.
I love doing it in spring. You're like the daffodil of Stillwater.
Oh, my gosh. I'm going to have a T-shirt made, and I'll wear that proudly. You are welcome back here anytime.
We'll have you
back soon, my lady. Thank you so much. Folks, have a great day. Thank you. A little bit of snow out there. I hope a little bit is all we get. That'll be enough. We'll see you Monday on the All Request and Dedication program. High noon. Join us for some good, clean, musical fun. See you then. Bye-bye.